John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome from Tony Husband and Jamie Watson. This is NSC Backstage. We are presented by Camarena Tequila, and it is good to be back with you on another Monday night, and, well, particularly good, Jamie, this Monday night. I mean, we're feeling pretty good after, wow, a rocking Saturday night in Music City.
Yeah, it was an incredible evening, Tony. It was one of the most thrilling and entertaining matches that didn't involve having to come from behind. It was a match in which Nashville SC were about as dominant as we've seen this team be in Major League Soccer. A night that was a game that you may not always see. It may not have the ebbs and flows that you are used to seeing, but it was all in favor of the boys in gold, and it was awesome. Can't wait to break it down, talk about it, talk about the five-game homestand that is now concluded, get our thoughts on that, and also where the team sits, tied for third in the East. Things are looking up and up for Nashville SC.
And our backstage view is going to come from Steve Guppy, and the Nashville SC first assistant coach. Well, just a great person to get some insight from tonight.
Yeah, I mean, we can't wait to chat with him. Steve Guppy has a wealth of experience as a player and also as a coach as well. So it's going to be interesting to hear the dynamic as he thinks and his sort of vibe, I guess, with Gary Smith. Those two have a long-term relationship that they have worked together. They know each other. I mean, they go together. Essentially like peanut butter and jelly. These guys are incredible together. Just
wonderful human beings and almost an even better coach. So
let's sort of recap where we are at the end of this five-game homestand, Tony. We've got 11 points in the bag at the end of this five games. And I think when you look at it, you start to say, what was the threshold and the benchmark going into these five games that you were going to say you'd be pleased with? And I think if you said 10 points, that averages 2 points a game, that's pretty much the gold standard across the board. And Nashville SC end the five-game homestand with 11 points. Unbeaten in five throughout the stretch. Tony, 3-0-2, how did you feel the team evolved, I guess, throughout the course of those five games?
I think it came down to a big, big game. I think this is why Saturday's game was so important, because this was about... I'm going to come across this studio at the moment. We saw this out in the first commercial. But this was a game where we went into it 2-2 with the two wins and the two ties. At that point, it was a tipping point kind of result, because I think if you come away with either a defeat or a draw against Chicago, you might have come away from those five games and said, was it quite enough? Was there enough of a points return there? And so to win, but then to win so emphatically, was just a brilliant way to round it off. It's a massive feel-good factor going into a big away game as well this week. So five games in all, to come away from those games with that record, with that points return, with a victory over Philadelphia, Supporters Shield winners. Okay, maybe there was that one night of disappointment against Atlanta. Montreal have proved a tough nut to crack, but plenty are finding that this season. So I wouldn't say that having tied with them twice already this season is necessarily bad results. So to round it off, though, against Chicago, an absolutely thrilling way to do it. And I'm particularly keen to know what you thought, and our special guest tonight as well, Steve Guppy, will have plenty to say about the technique, the skill, the qualities of a certain Hany Mukhtar in scoring that hat-trick that makes him the MLS Player of the Week.
Yeah, absolutely deserved it so. MLS Player of the Week, and now record holder of the fastest hat-trick to start a match in Major League Soccer history. Previously, it was, I believe, 27 minutes. It took Hany Mukhtar 16 minutes. And I think John Freeman, who does play-by-play for us brilliantly on these networks for the games, actually tweeted out on Sunday. He said he went back and he used a stopwatch from start to finish so you don't count the goal celebrations. The red card happened, mind you, in between. Of actual gameplay, it was 122 seconds by his calculations between all three goals, which is absurd to have a hat trick that quick against a team in Chicago who, they're not bad, by the way. Like, they are not a bad team. It was a poor reflection of themselves on Saturday night, which we saw. But Hani Mukhtar was just that good on the night. The team was that good. And, yeah, an incredible performance. 3-0, up a man in 16 minutes. I'm going to be very interested to hear what Steve Guppy was saying to the team when you're in that dynamic, you know, 16 minutes into the match.
And we talk about those goals, talk about a memorable night at Nissan Stadium. Let's just remind ourselves of how it all unfolded live right here on ESPN 94.9.
Israel's got it with Mukhtar! He scores! Lift off in Nashville! A giant gift from the visitors! Angles the ball in towards Mukhtar. Edge of the 18, a step over. Oh, what a goal! Hani Mukhtar doubles Nashville's lead! Like a freight train around traffic cones! It's Mukhtar who steps forward. Mukhtar! A goal from the heavens! Astonishing! Pillow-footed touch. Sends it right side for Leal. Leal off the post. Rebound, Sapong, tap in. This is a rout! Goes towards Mukhtar. It's headed as far as Nealis. Scores it to Anunga. Oh, he scored two! Brian Anunga. His first Major League Soccer goal.
And there you have it. Those were the five goals as voiced over by John Freeman. You listen to NSC Backstage presented by Camarena Tequila. Tony Husband, Jamie Watson here. We are breaking down the 5-1 win over Chicago Fire. It was a night to remember, a history-making night. You also got a first goal from Brian Anunga. You heard that as well. Big congratulations to him. Assisted by Dylan Nealis. Got his first start for Nashville SC. Recorded his first assist. And CJ Sapong continually finding that form. That has seen him score, I believe, 74 goals now in Major League Soccer. It is exciting times right now as the team will hit the road to go to Columbus and go to lower.com field for the very first time on Wednesday night.
Do you think that kind of result was coming? Do you feel there's been a build-up, some of those frustrations, some of those ties early in the season? Do you think somebody sooner or later was really going to get that whooping?
I think so, yeah. And it was just almost a matter of time because I think going into the match, Tony, you gave us a great stat at the top of the show in the pregame that you said Nashville SC led Major League Soccer in shots approaching the 200 mark. I believe it was like 182.
188, I think, going into the game, something like that.
Yeah, don't let, you know, I mean, yeah, everybody knows that 74% of statistics are made up on the spot, right? And then by the end of the night, I think it was 25 some odd shots, pushed them well over 200, leading Major League Soccer. So it's quite interesting because others want to build a narrative and the numbers don't actually back that narrative up. I think the narrative has now been flipped on its head. You've got a team in Nashville SC that have acquired Ake Loba. You've got Hani Mukhtar with 7 goals now, MLS Player of the Week. Randall Leal, arguably one of Costa Rica's most exciting and promising attacking players. And CJ Sapong scoring goals like he does. I mean, it's one of these things that right now things are firing and it was only a matter of time. And unfortunately for Chicago Fire, it was a perfect storm of Johan Kapelhoff having a disastrous 15 minutes, providing a goal, getting sent off, and the foul that led to the third goal free kick. So, yeah, to answer your question, it was a matter of time. Chicago Fire were just unfortunately on the wrong end of it if you're a Fire fan.
Wow, I mean, and the takeaway for them, I mean, Rafael Wicki was not there on the night, and obviously a family matter to attend to back in Europe for him. Frank Klopas, vastly experienced, but, you know, a penny for his thoughts as he sat there and watched this kind of nightmare unfold. And I think I said to you on the broadcast on the night, it was like, every time something went wrong for them, you thought, well, what else can go wrong?
And it couldn't sure get enough, any worse, right? And it did. Yeah. Every time, Tony. Every time. This would be an interesting one to ask first assistant coach Steve Guppy when we have him on just after the break here to get his thoughts of what it was like to be on the bench and, you know, what could Frank Klopas, who was filling in for Alfred Wicki, as you mentioned, what could he have been saying to the team or been thinking, hey, you know, at 4-0 at halftime, maybe he just said stop the bleeding. And to be fair, they did, but the game was well beyond doubt, and it also gave Gary Smith and Steve Guppy the opportunity to think about making some changes and rest some players ahead of the match on Wednesday in Columbus, but also the match at home against FC Cincinnati on Saturday. So 3 games, 7 days, you get a comfortable result, you're able to take some players off and manage some minutes. You tick the box, and only blemish conceding a goal. If that's the only blemish, Tony, 5-1 win instead of a 5-0 win, I think any manager in the world will take that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we've reflected on it. We've had our say on it. But we're going to get the backstage view of it when we come back from our first commercial, because we're going to be joined by the Nashville SC first assistant coach, a man who's vastly experienced. I saw him play in his prime in England. He played in Scotland for one of the biggest clubs on earth in Celtic. And we're going to bring Steve Guppy into the room, and that's going to be after these messages. You're listening to NSE Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. And welcome back to the program. Tony Husband, Jamie Watson with you on this Monday night. Really busy week coming up for Nashville SC off the back of that memorable result against Chicago Fire on Saturday night with the second fastest hat-trick in MLS history and the fastest from kickoff from Hani Mukhtar. It's away to Columbus Wednesday night. Big test against the reigning MLS Cup winners. Then back here on Saturday, Nissan Stadium, FC Cincinnati's second visit to the stadium. Maybe a little bit of revenge as well in store from Gary Smith's side up against Yap Stam and his team as they return to Middle Tennessee. Time to bring in our backstage special guest for tonight. He is the Nashville SC first assistant coach, former Premier League star with Leicester City, played in the Scottish Premier League with Celtic. He's coached at both club and international level, and right now Nashville SC lucky enough to have him on the books assisting Gary Smith as well. Good evening to Steve Guppy.
Good evening.
Well, I gave you the big intro there, so you can't let us down now for the next 45 minutes, all right?
I just feel like you're setting me up to knock me down here. So I wonder what you got up your sleeve. But very, very nice intro. Thank you.
Well deserved. And we talked to you. Hey, you know, you lucked out. You come in as the guest on the first show after a 5-1 win. So, you know, the stage is yours, first of all, to just give us your reflections on what a fantastic night and what a performance from the team.
Yes, I mean, obviously, with a result like that, it was a fantastic evening for everyone, and it was great being the biggest attendance of the season. So all the stars were aligned. It's funny, going into this game, I think Chicago, in our minds, maybe New England aside, was probably the hardest. Maybe Philly, sorry, Philly as well, was one of the hardest games we had on paper. You know, we played Chicago last year. We drew at home 1-1, and they gave us a bit of a doing that night. So, you know, we were fully prepared for this game. And, you know, it's funny how sometimes it works out differently. But having watched the game back 3 or 4 times, you know, as a life of a coach, you have to watch this game over and over, which is nice when you win. But when you don't, it's not so much fun. I have to say, right from the word go, everyone to a man was closing down the ball. We really strangled the life out of Chicago from the moment the game started. And I know there was mistakes made by their centre-half there, but I think the pressure, especially, you know, you defend from the front, especially the way the forwards attacked, you know, the closing down and stifling space. You know, I like to think we maybe earned those mistakes, and you know, and the way Hanny finished, we were certainly ruthless in front of goal.
Steve, have you ever been a part of a game where it's 3-0, 16 minutes in, and you're up a man? I mean, in your long career, both as a player and a manager, have you ever come across that kind of a dynamic?
Well, it's funny. It's whenever, I mean, we had a couple. I remember at Colorado, we beat New York Red Bulls, and we were up 4-5, something like that, very, very quickly. And it was a very similar night. But I can remember, and I thought about it actually while I was on the bench Saturday night, as I remember playing at a team called Port Vale in the Championship in England back in the day. And we were 4-0 up against Queen's Park Rangers live on TV with 10 minutes to go, and we drew 4-4. If a game had gone on another minute, we'd have lost 5-4. We completely collapsed. So, you know, you never get complacent, because, experience will tell you, look, they scored instantly after half time, which was really disappointing. And you think, okay, now you've given them a little bit of a boost, what they're going to do. But, you know, thankfully, we really regrouped and redoubled our efforts and snuffed out any sort of idea of coming back in. Of course, being down to 10 men helped us. You know, that extra man always does. But I thought the attitude from start to finish was great. And I imagine that Chicago couldn't get off the pitch quick enough.
Just one struck me, actually, Steve. I'm just thinking back to some kind of ridiculous comebacks. I think there was an FA Cup or a League Cup tie, Reading and Arsenal, I think, a few years ago. And I think Reading led something like 4-0 in that game, or 3-0, 4-0, something like that. And anyway, and it ended up, Arsenal came back and won about 5-4 or something. I think Theo Walcott scored. But yeah, it's a crazy kind of thing that happens. So my point, and I think a lot of people would be interested to know, there you are, you're on the sidelines, Hadi Mukhtar puts in that peach of a free kick, it's 3-0, you're down to 10 men. Now, I'll let you into a secret, I pressed my talkback button to the producer of our show at that point and said, this is brilliant, but I said, but also, this is now a challenge for our broadcast, because do you know what, this game is over. And then I went, well, probably. just to be
hopefully
safe. As a kind of, it's done in terms of that we know Nashville should will go on and win this game. But when you're down on the sidelines, something like that happens, and what is going through your mind? Do you dare even to allow yourself to think, do you know what, this is over? Or are you so ingrained into the game and so concerned about a slip up at the other end or something going wrong that you're just relentlessly driving on and thinking, no, we need a fourth, we need a fifth, you know what I mean?
No, of course. You should. It should be over and you should go on and win. But like you say, history doesn't... look at us this season. There's been teams 2-0 up against us multiple times. And they'd probably be thinking, we've probably got this one in the bag. And we've proved them wrong. So you can never be sure. You know, if you score 4 goals, why can't the opposition score 4 goals? You know, that's what it's about. But I think when we went in at halftime 4-0, the shout, believe it or not, in the dressing room was like, let's get the next goal. If we get the next goal, then, you know, it's one of those rare occasions where you can really enjoy the game as a player and maybe, you know, really showcase your skills and really enjoy it. You know, if you don't get the next goal, it becomes 4-1, then it starts becoming a little bit difficult, can be harder, and you can make it a lot more difficult, which is exactly what we did, of course. But we redoubled our efforts and obviously got that fifth goal. And it wasn't till, I remember, the 87th minute I started to encourage Gary to sit down and enjoy the last time. At 5-1, we're at 10 men and 3 minutes to go, I thought, yeah, I think we've won that.
We're all right now.
There we go.
We think we've just about... We just don't want long stoppage time or anything.
Savor those final 3 minutes and enjoy it. Now, that's the voice of first assistant coach Steve Guppy here on NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Steve, when you look at the 5-game homestand, which was the longest homestand that any team had in Major League Soccer this season, it's concluded now with 11 points, 3 wins, 2 draws. How do you assess it? Were you and the staff pleased with the point total after the segmented 5 games that we talked with Mike Jacobs about last week? With the 5-game segment, were you guys pleased with it all said and done?
Well, I think, first and foremost, we've unbeaten, which is really important, and that's a great feeling to have unbeaten at home, and you want to protect that. Of course, when you draw games, there's always a tinge of disappointment. Some of the games we've come back, really got dug ourselves out of holes, which shows a lot of character. But, you know, I think when you look at it, if you look back to, you know, this time or maybe the beginning of last season when we played Atlanta, seems a lifetime ago now, and those first few games, you know, there was plenty of spirit, there's plenty of effort, but we were not creating much. We didn't create much. There wasn't loads of shots raining in on Atlanta's goal. But now you fast forward, and okay, we've had some draws, and you know, thankfully we've had some wins that sort of even it out a little bit. But we're creating more, and that's really to me is the important thing. If you're creating chances, it won't always go your way, but that's a sign of improvement. And you know, and early on it was a real struggle to create, but as we've evolved and become better, and the players, you know, have really reacted to, you know, the system and what have you. You know, that's really an encouraging sign for Gary and the other coaches.
Is a result like that as well, when you see the quality of some of the finishing, is it a kind of night of where you feel a little bit of reward for those hard hours you spend out there on that training ground? We watch what you do with working one-on-one with players, working on individual skill, you know, crossing, shooting, step overs, you know, dropping shoulders, all those things that I know you love to drill into players, things that you were, you know, so accomplished at during your playing days. Do nights like that give you a little bit of validation as well?
Well, I mean, it was obviously really satisfying. I mean, I'm pleased first and foremost for Hanny, you know, that he gets these goals and he gets these lovely moments in life that you don't get enough of. But, you know, you go back and you see the hard work that Hanny puts into it. Free kicks, he practices daily. And I say, I've not seen, I think he's the best I've ever seen at free kicks. And he certainly puts the, you know, the hard miles into practicing. But going back to, you said the step overs and the 1v1s, the reason I'm so obsessed by it all and fascinated is that, you know, to score a goal in soccer is the hardest thing to do. There is no doubt. For me, after that, it is to beat a player. That's the next hardest thing. That's why you don't see it very often. But if you can be a forward, as Hanny showed at the weekend, that you can create something yourself without relying on others, then that could well take you to the next level. You know, that is really special. And Hanny is a classic case that I think one of the things is that when we sign new players, or obviously when I first came to the club, what I did beforehand, I went through all the forward-thinking players and went through their whole careers and lined up every single 1v1 they'd done in their career. Because you can do that, you know, with the technology we have these days. It's not, you know, it's not like I have to go for every individual game and, you know, it's just there. So you collect it. And it's funny, I actually told Lobo when we signed him that I had these clips ready for him to show him when he was ready. He laughed at me because I think he thought I was joking.
But, oh, no, he'll find out you're not.
But I went through him with Hanny's, and Hanny's was an interesting one where there wasn't loads of them. It's not something that he was particularly good at or really believed in. He was more linking up, give and goes, you know, a very technical player, very talented player, of course. But his actual ability at taking players on, for instance, the best 1v1s I could find him were normally in the middle of the pitch, nothing in the final third, and he always went to his left. That was his favourite side. So that was something that took a bit of convincing, but we worked at it daily, and he's responded, bought more and more into it. And so when, you know, there's more and more signs of it, and if you look in recent weeks, this season especially, I think the first sign of it last year was Toronto away. You know, the playoff game, where we beat them 1-0. You know, Hanny picked up the ball. He had three defenders around him. He did a double step over, pushed it to the side, and shot, obviously, Daniel Rios hitting in the rebound. So he maybe didn't get the plaudits he deserved for that incredible moment of skill, because Daniel Rios scored, you know, and that was fantastic, you know, goal poaching. But then you obviously look at the weekend when, you know, he did that fabulous bit of skill and then shot before the defender had a chance to react. You know, and that's what, you know, I like to show the players in their 1v1s. It's not so much, well, you look at the skill that they've produced and let's see how tight it is and how compact and how in control they are. But you also look to see what it does to the defender. So if anyone out has got the goal on repeat, have a look to see how it affects the defender, his tricks. And you just know that, you know, that was a fantastic bit of skill. And to shoot straight away into the far post, it was really nice to see. But not just there, you know, in that maybe Brian Enunga's goal, you know, Randall out on the left wing there, he is someone through his 1v1s normally always comes in on his right. But this time, for the goal, he went down the line and crossed with his left foot. So they're all little instances where you're looking for little moments of encouragement, just something to keep you going as a coach, but also hope that the players go, yeah, well, you know, that was maybe worth the extra bit of work we did there, and I've got my reward. And obviously Brian Anunga managing to keep a shot on target without hitting him over the bar. Without leaving back. I think the ball boys were already on their way going in the crowd to get the ball when he started approaching it. But he's someone that we've spoken after, you know, sat down and showed him every shot that he gets over the bar. And looking at, you know, you're leaning back, you're looking at the shot, you've got to keep your head over the ball, maybe think about having your nose over the ball, try and hone it down so you can concentrate, but also the follow through low and all these things, you know, finally came to pass Saturday night, and, you know, and hopefully now it take that on, because, you know, Brian Anunga's another fantastic story this season.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating insight there, Steve. And I must also credit the question, basically, that came from one of our listeners, Chris Ivey. And thank you to everyone who's been in touch through our social media channels today to put your questions through to Steve. And we'll try and run through some more of them as well before the end of the show. We're going to take another break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more to Steve about his career, about the little break he had at one time in his career when he didn't even kick a ball. And yet, look at what a career he managed to follow after that. So lots more to come from Steve Guppy and from myself, Tony Husband, and Jamie Watson. You're listening to NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. And we welcome you back to NSC Backstage. Tony Husband, Jamie Watson, and our special guest, Nashville SC First Assistant Coach Steve Guppy, is with us tonight. Steve, in this segment of the show, we just wanted to wind the clock back to your playing days and coming through. You didn't have the most straightforward football upbringing in many ways, because I remember we spoke last year and you talked about a phase, you know, in your life where you almost your head turned away from the game. You were working on a construction site, so you're kind of proof that, you know, if you keep believing, though, you can still achieve that dream, even if at times, you know, you switch off a bit from it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought this up, actually, because, I mean, we could certainly bore everyone by talking about what happened when I was a professional, and I think I regularly fall into the trap of, now I've retired, to as you retire, you think you're better than what you were, and I'm borderline world class in my own mind these days. But
that's what I tell my kids too. Yeah, you're right.
Truth was sadly not quite there. But no, what happened was is you see it a lot in, you know, I know Jamie Smith in the academy will have these sort of headaches all the time. But, you know, kids now in soccer, you know, they're passionate, have a dream, and I was absolutely passionate. And from about 11 or 12, I was pretty good, but I think most kids at 11, 12 are pretty good. That's the thing. But I didn't have my growth spur until I was about 17. So I left school at 16, and I was like the second smallest guy in my year. So I was really struggling. And I had this awful experience where from 11, 12, I was beating all these players. And then as they grew and I didn't, you know, now all of a sudden I'm dropping my shoulder and going past them, and I could maybe fool them, but they were, you know, coming back at me. I had no pace, and they were just stampeding all over me, basically. And at that age, it was like a crushing blow, really. So it culminated really eventually in me at 16. I had no apprenticeship offers from any club, like my local club, Southampton or Portsmouth, and all these teams I'd had trials at when I was younger, when they were interested. All of a sudden, no one was interested at all. And it just became too much. So actually, I stopped. I retired at 16, which is obviously a little bit early. But I swear to you, I did not kick a football for nearly 2 years. Now, luckily for me, as they say, the learning years are between 5 and 12. That's when you really hone down your skills. And that's why I'm always saying to the players, you can still get better, but you have to become obsessive, you know, really practice desperately hard, because they're the years where you really hammer down. And luckily for me, 5 and 12, I was pretty obsessed. My dad was a goalkeeper for West Brom, and it was great, really. We're in the back garden where most kids were taking shots at their dad. He had me running at me, dropping my shoulder and going past him time and time again. And I look back now and I think, wow, if he hadn't have done that, you know, I'd probably still be on a building site.
And that's the interesting thing. I mean, you were on a construction site. So what was the moment? Where was that moment where you hadn't kicked the ball for 2 years? You're working in construction down in Hampshire, England, and you and I both know that part of the world very well indeed. But it's not so nice that you want to spend your life there on a construction site. So what was that moment that suddenly made you put some boots back on and kick a ball again?
Well, it was simple. I mean, I started to grow, and I was pretty skinny, but I shot up to impressive figure you see most days at the club, and I just didn't realise at the time, because I was too busy going out fishing and things like that, that I was actually got my pace back, and the turning point was that my friends, my schoolmates who weren't very good at soccer, they started up a Sunday afternoon team. Leeds 6 down at Fleming Park, which only you will know, Tony. Yes. In like League 6 of Southampton's league, I mean, as low as you could get. And they talked me into playing for them. And then within a short period of time there, you know, my confidence came back. I was thoroughly enjoying it. And I was, without realizing it, I guess I was kind of running rings around everyone. And I think the turning point, and you always need, as everyone knows, you need a bit of luck in this life. And so I played that season, and the following year I signed for a team called Coldham Common, which was a couple of leagues up, but they played in Hampshire League One. You didn't get paid, but you didn't have to wash your kit. So it felt pretty special. And we drew a team in the Southampton Senior Cup called Bashley in the New Forest, which once again, Tony, you will know. And a couple of things happened that night. They were obviously three or four leagues above us, so they were expected to win, and they did. But I played that night. I worked on a building site all day. We all got in a minibus, and we went down. It was the first time I'd ever played under floodlights. You know, that's how low I was at the time in soccer, you know, leagues. And where the bit of luck came my way is that I was up against this 6'2" right back as I was playing left wing, and I quite liked playing against the tall ones because I thought they turned slowly, so I quite liked getting at them. I wasn't too worried about their size. And unbeknown to me, there was a lot of professional soccer teams watching him because he was looked upon as a talent. And that night, you know, we lost 2-0, but I did actually give him a bit of a going over. And I didn't think anything of it. I just dropped my shoulder, going around and crossing. I thought, this is good. I'm enjoying this under the floodlights. Fantastic. And then the next day, my mum and dad's phone rang about 20 times from different football teams, ranging from Coventry City to Southampton to you name it. So I guess I played all right that night.
Yeah,
that's incredible. Incredible.
I mean, and that is sometimes just how things work. I mean, you know, not every player signs at the academy at the age of 8 or whatever and is kind of processed through and then, you know, goes out on loan at the age of 16 and then, you know, whatever. There are so many different journeys to the top. And I suppose to kind of try and make that kind of Tennessee relevant. So Steve's talking there like about basically playing at just a Parks Field, you know, leisure centre kind of place in Nashville. And then maybe that game went on in Murfreesboro on a Tuesday night under lights or at Brentwood Academy or something. You know, that's how local we're talking here. You know, real provincial stuff. And yet from that moment, It's into the professional ranks. And of course, the professional ranks would take you on a great journey, Steve. And, you know, I mean, we could go on all night as we move through your professional career, but you would play under Martin O'Neill at Leicester. I actually saw you play for Leicester at Southampton very early in my career. Sam Watts on social media asks, what's your kind of greatest Premier League memory?
Well, I mean, getting there,
that was a good one. Good start. You know, there.
I think it was everyone's dream to play. I think just to touch on the last thing is that I think what summed up how things went for me getting to the Premiership is that when I was playing Sunday afternoon with my mates down at Fleming Park all them years ago, I didn't know 7 years later I would be stepping out of Leicester and playing against a player who, while I was playing park football 7 years earlier, was playing at the Nou Camp for Barcelona. And I wouldn't have, if you'd have said to me then, our paths would meet. You know, it was like Ferreira played for Chelsea and I was playing for Leicester. And it's just crazy how when you get a bit of luck and things go your way, where it can take you. So, yeah, I guess loads of happy memories playing in a Premiership is where you want to be. Lucky to play nearly 200 games, which just phenomenal, really, for someone who couldn't tackle or head. But it was, yeah, they're all fantastic memories.
Yeah, that's incredible. We could listen sort of all night to this. And if you're just joining us now, that's the first assistant for Nashville SC, Steve Guppy, here on NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Steve, we've only got you for a few more minutes. And so I wanted to, I guess, ask this question because you've seen it firsthand. And Lucas Holifield, I hope I'm saying that last name correct here, asked this question. The biggest difference between the Premier League and Major League Soccer. Now, maybe let's modernize that question and sort of narrow it down, because you know the difference of what it takes to play at the top flight in England, and we'll bring it currently to today's present day. How big of a difference or how small of a difference would you say there is in the quality of, I mean, we don't have to talk about the world-class top of the top player, but the average Premier League team and a team in Major League Soccer, and I don't know, how big of a difference is there? Could a Major League Soccer team, you know, finish mid-table in the Premier League?
It's something that I get asked a lot, especially back home in England. I think it's an unfair question, because you think about it, the English league's been going 100 years, you know, and now we want to compare ourselves to a league that's not been going, you know, nearly any time as established. But I'll say this, I played for DC United in what, 2005, 2006, long time ago, and I was pretty old when I played for them, it has to be said.
That was my rookie year, by the way, so I do remember you. I remember watching you, looking up to you.
I'm not sure. I probably sat next to you most of the time. But you look back now and I think, okay, now I've been back and forth to England, so not always in the MLS scene. You come back, and I come back now and I see a league that's come a long way. And I think that with the cap, and it makes things really exciting, because a lot of teams are very even, and, you know, and it's hard to win a game in this league. It really is. But then you look through the, you know, and you look through player and player, and you go, well, okay, what players could play in the Premiership? You know, Hany Mukhtar, could he play in the Premiership? I think he could, you know, and then you've got maybe players who've come through USL and who maybe not on massive money, and you go, well, okay, well, that probably be a stretch for them. So, and of course, you know, in the Premiership, you don't have the heat and all the different, you know, things that come into play in MLS. So they're two very different leagues. All I know is that, to me, the MLS is certainly improving.
Just rounding it off then, Stephen, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and I think we'll have to get you back on at another occasion to talk through so many other, you know, great moments. You've played at Celtic, you've worked with the likes of Martin O'Neill, Roy Keane, people like that. Just a final word, though, just about how much you're enjoying Nashville. You know, it was a decision for you to leave England, to come back across and join up with Gary again. How pleased are you that you made that decision to come back out here and to work with Nashville in Major League Soccer?
Well, of course, it's a privilege. I think the big, really appealing thing when Gary wanted me to come is almost like you got a clean slate. It's a brand new franchise going back a year now, so you got a chance to try and be part of something you build from the bottom up, and that's something that's very unique and very rare. And I think we're all very excited about that prospect. And it's just, you know, there's highs and lows in any job in life. But, you know, to me, it's working with players who, listen, I say to every player we sign, I say, look, you know, if you want to improve, let's try and find out how good you can be. And if you're willing to meet me halfway and the other coaches, then we'll do all we can to help you. And when you come across those players who do that, who've got that obsession and want to improve and give it everything they've got, then it's a pleasure, and I'd travel anywhere to be part of that.
And our thanks to Reed J. Murray on social media for the inspiration behind that that question as well. Steve, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. And good luck, of course, for the rest of this season. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you.
There we go. Steve Guppy with Jamie Watson and I. And after the break, we are going to turn our attention to Wednesday night's big game at Lower.com Field as Nashville SC travel to reigning MLS Cup champions, Columbus Crew. You're listening to NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. And welcome back to our final segment, NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Tony Husband, Jamie Watson with you. And in this final phase of the show, we want to preview a big game coming up on Wednesday night at Lower.com Field. It's going to be a rematch of last season's Eastern Conference playoff semi-final.
The whistle goes. It's all over. The dream ends at Mapfre Stadium for Nashville SC. They have been the pride of Music City in their debut year in Major League Soccer. Nashville, who produced a story we never believed possible if you wind the clock back to February. Beaten, but proud.
And there we go. The dream ended for Nashville SC on the night, but the dream did not end for the Columbus Crew as they went on to win the 2020 MLS Cup Final. And joining us now, we have a very special guest who was along for that ride all the way through the championship. His color commentator for Columbus Crew, former professional soccer player, former U20 national team member who participated in the 2006 FIFA Women's World Championship, is none other than Jordan Angeli. Jordan, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Is it still a little hard to hear that from last year? Or do you still feel, I mean, of course you feel proud, but that was such a good game. I remember that game very vividly.
It went down to the wire, didn't it? And look, yeah, if you're going to lose and get knocked out, you want to lose to the eventual champion, right? So yeah, maybe there was, like, when you're out of it, you're rooting for, you know, the team that knocks you out, and anybody but Atlanta, yeah, right?
And Jordan, make us feel even prouder by telling us that was Columbus's toughest game in the playoffs last year.
It was. That was a really good game. It was a good game. I mean, it wasn't the MLS Cup wasn't our toughest game in the playoffs, that's for sure. We just stomped Seattle, so that was a really fun experience. But that game against Nashville was good, as I think that this game on Wednesday is going to be a really good game as well.
Well, perfect segue. Look, you're such a professional. So when you look at this Columbus Crew side and you look at Nashville SC, I guess give us the sort of scouting report of Columbus, because this Columbus team is not a team that is going to be at full strength, international call-ups, players coming back from international call-ups, obviously with the Gold Cup going on. So maybe the current state of the Columbus Crew, having not lost in four, but only won once in the past four. Where are things right now with the Columbus Crew, Jordan?
I think you hit a lot of it right there, Jamie, is they've only lost one in their last seven. So they've hit a pretty good stretch after that international break in June. This is a team who, like a lot of teams in MLS this year, have had a lot of injuries, had a lot of absences with key players, and it has turned into, all right, what is the culture within our squad? And do we truly believe in the depth chart that we've developed over the year, the off season, and even some during the season? And players have come in and really stepped up. And I think whenever that happens, you guys have both called games with teams like that. If you're maybe not the first or second choice, maybe sometimes, you know, lower on the depth chart, and you step in and you have a good game, everybody around you starts to believe in what this team can accomplish. And I feel like that's starting to build, because they've suffered a lot of injuries and had international absences. At one point, we had 12 guys who weren't able to play, whether it was international absences or injuries. So it's been difficult, but I really do think that it's a team who believes in how they play, which is very possession oriented, and who they can be defensively, which is tough to break down at times.
You're hearing Jordan Angeli's voice, who is the color commentator for Columbus Crew here on NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Jordan, all eyes for Columbus Crew go to the maestro, the playmaker, number 10, Lucas Zelarayán. I've heard you break down his play and borderline lose your mind, as you should, at the moments of magic he's created. Just how special is Zelarayán? How important is he to Columbus? And what can Nashville SC fans expect from Lucas Zelarayán on Wednesday?
He is very special. And like the best playmakers in this league, he can change a game in an instant. And one of the things that I find really interesting about him is he is a playmaker. He's a 10, right? He is so crafty on the ball, and he can start and stop on a dime. But he's not afraid of a tackle or a challenge, and he has some grit to him as well, and he can help out defensively. So I think you're going to see him work both sides of the ball. But when he's on the ball, his ability on the dribble to shuffle past players and connect in the final third is really just something special. And you guys got to be careful. You can't give them a free kick near the top of the box.
No, you cannot. Well, right? No. Might be a free kick. Off
it could be. Well, I got to say, this is the two number 10s against each other.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Mukhtar and Zelarayan. I mean, maybe we should just actually before the game just have a contest between 25-yard free kicks and who can score the most out of five.
We might be there all night, though. That's the only problem.
They just keep scoring them. That would be the thing.
It has been, you know, fantastic to watch. And you almost have this air of inevitability, like you say, Jordan. You know, when Zelarayan's in that position, you kind of feel like he's going to stick the ball in the back of the net. Now, against all this and the challenges the crew have faced this season, navigating all those things you've talked about, has been the backdrop of moving into a new stadium, something Nashville SC will do in a year's time, or just under a year's time or so. What has that transition been like? Saw you in the shiny new commentary position that you have with Neil Seeker as well at the weekend. What has the transition to the new stadium been like for everyone?
It's been honestly hard to express. Just, you know, my brain goes back to what it would be like to be on the team and get to experience this in so many ways. The stadium is unreal. The locker room looks like it's out of a video game. It is so clean and pristine and big, so you can see everybody at all times. It gives a real team atmosphere to it. But then you walk onto the pitch, and because of the way that the stadium is built with this gigantic roof, it is, and you guys will hear it, it is loud. Oh my gosh, is it loud. And our commentary booths are right at the top, so it get a little reverb from there, which I guess you know well being in Nashville. And it's just incredible. Everything about it is really, really special. They put in a lot of details that make it unique. And honestly, I step into my quote unquote office and it will never get old because it is a thing of beauty. Yeah. And, you know, it's something that the club deserved. They've done a lot for this league in general, and it's cool to see them be the first team as well with the next new stadium and be a part of this new crew, I guess.
Yeah, I think we're all sort of envious with excitement here in Nashville. Just following up on that, Jordan, what does a new stadium experience, like when it's a soccer-specific stadium, what does that do for a fan experience when you're going there? Because Nashville SC fans who are listening tonight will be in a similar situation, as Tony mentioned, about a year from now. What does that do? How does it change? And how does it sort of elevate the experience of going to a game?
I think that's the elevation of it is really what it's about, because watching your guys' game and just being your second year, I mean, the fan base in Nashville it seems like it's a really special thing. And when you get your own stadium, there is a pride about it. And everybody, now this isn't just at the games. I've talked to people in my apartment complex, in my golf league, like all over the city, and everybody is talking about going to a game because it is just a special place to be right now. It is a place to be in the city because the Nordic and every single fan who is in there, if you're not wearing black and gold, like my neighbors here said, we were wearing black and gold and we really felt like we were left out and we didn't fit in. So it's a special thing that you guys, I know, will enjoy in Nashville. I've seen some what it's going to look, your stadium's going to look like there. And it looks like it's going to be a really cool place as well. It is, it's something special. And there's a pride that goes into it, right? That you create an atmosphere that's unique in MLS, which is really becoming a league with such good supporter sections and such good turnout at all these games. So it's a cool thing to do. And I feel like it's really elevated the fan experience.
We're looking forward to it. We're going to be there Wednesday night. So we look forward to being at lower.com field. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us to break that one down tonight. That's Jordan Angeli, who will be in the commentary booth for Columbus Crew against Nashville SC. Jamie and I will be there as well. You'll hear it live on ESPN 94.9. But you've been listening to NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. We'll see you next week.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. The social distance.